Mostly I don't want to talk this time except to respond to the questions that have come up in you. I wanted just to finish off what I started to say about the necessity in any serious conflict situation for coming to terms with the other side, that is the unconscious. That means all the shadow potentialities of the personality. Not something bad, but the good and the bad aspects of oneself, or the positive and the negative, however you want to look at it. But all those aspects of the personality that one is not normally aware of, these are what one has to come into contact with if one is going to reach a satisfactory solution in consciousness. Now, the ways in which one can carry on a dialogue with the unconscious are several. One way, as I mentioned, is to pay attention to dreams. Another way is to do drawings or work in clay. Dance your moods. It's what Jung calls active imagination. It is a way of letting the unconscious speak. And if you see conflict as, if you see that the psychological reality behind a conflict is conflicting personalities in one person trying to have a say, then you see that it is necessary that you listen, give a chance to the other personality in yourself, and listen to what it has to say. That isn't to say to do what it wants, because we have some very primitive personalities inside us. And one thing Jung used to say, if he felt what he called a shadow impulse or a shadow urge, he would look over his left shoulder and say, "Yes, I hear you, but let me do it." What that says is that the conscious ego that has its business in the outside world has to take responsibility for all those different personalities within oneself. So you can't just act out shadow impulses and say, "Well, he did it, or she did it." We live in a real world, but we also live in a world of psychic reality, that is, our inner psychological ambiguity. And that's what we have to live with. Now, I would like to have some questions. Yes. There's a nice passage in Jung's two essays where he talks about the naivety of imagining that a sophisticated person can go back to hoeing his turnips. It's an interesting idea. If you can do it, then go ahead. But as he points out, it doesn't work. So after a period of evading or avoiding coming to terms with a conflict, if one has some moral integrity, one is eventually driven to deal with what is a personal psychological problem and not put it out on to the neighbors or the children or the employer or Russia. Jung goes as far as to say in one set of essays that whether or not there is a third world war that will wipe out the human race depends on how many people can hold the tension of the opposites within themselves and not project the other side of themselves onto another nation.
Yes? You made a comment about
Well, I find it almost impossible to speak in generalities when I'm talking about psychology, but they all indicate problems that probably are not sufficiently conscious. And anyone in working in psychoanalysis or any kind of depth therapy is aware that symptoms disappear as if by magic, even without paying much attention to them. The problem is what happens next to that symptom. It may go somewhere else in the body, physical symptoms. When I suggested that it may be helpful or profitable to look at such symptoms symbolically, I mean, for instance, with a back problem, one might ask oneself what burdens one is taking on that aren't, that don't belong to oneself. Could be. There are a lot of colloquial expressions that ring very true in such situations. The neck, too, as a connection between the head and the body, also speaks volumes about a problem in the bridge between consciousness, which we associate with the head, and the body. Yes. Well, not necessarily. Of course, I would certainly recommend that anyone with a bleeding ulcer go to a medical doctor. You know, if someone comes to me for analysis, one of the first things I generally try to determine is what physical symptoms are associated with or are that they're involved with. And I really like to work with people who have a good medical opinion about whatever physical symptoms they have. One mustn't forget that men and women are also animals, and things go wrong in the body. Once having established that there may be no real physiological reason for a physical symptom, then one can start to look at the symptom symbolically. Now, with the bleeding ulcers, things have gone very far, I would say, in such a case, and they should certainly have it looked at. Having cured that bleeding ulcer, it may come out in something else. Deafness, for instance, or an automobile accident. It depends on what action one takes in terms of finding out what is happening in your life. Yes. Well, it depends on the circumstances. On the whole, I think that in maintaining the tension means what they call in alchemy keeping the vessel boiling or keeping it warm. And when you let it out to other people, especially if you're in analysis, you know, where you have a natural container in the analytic setting for the emotion and the pain and so on, then you're letting off some of the pressure when you complain to friends and neighbors who really aren't interested anyway. They have their own lives to deal with, and they'd probably rather not hear your sorrows. So in general, holding the tension means putting up with the conflict, putting up with the vacillation between shall I do this or shall I do that, and not feeling that you have to make a decision. Now, as a friend pointed out to me in the intermission, when you take that position that you don't have to act, you are taking a position that is not collectively sanctioned, because our society expects us to be able to make a decision and to do so. And if you don't, you are just, you're unable to, and there's something wrong with you. What I'm suggesting is that if you don't know which, if you're not sure of what you're going to do, then do nothing. Buy time in some way or other. Well, perhaps we aren't talking about the same thing. Of course, there are people who one would characterize, I think, more generally or more particularly as hysterics, who are always in a state about something. But whether or not they get to the point where they suffer to the center of their moral being is a question. And what I'm talking about is our conflict situations where your life is at stake, not whether to buy milk or cornflakes. Yes.
Well, to relate that then to that first example that you gave, would that man never come to the point necessarily where he either was happy with his wife's behavior or was separated from her?
Well, the question doesn't come up in that example. Because what happened is that he held the tension and something happened that he wasn't prepared for. He was prepared to make a decision one way or the other. Something happened that made it unnecessary to make any decision at all at that time. Of course, different things happened in his analysis. But he experienced with that the intervention of that impersonal force, which appeared in his dream as the ball. What he experienced was a sense of peace. The outer circumstances did not change at the time. Go to a doctor.
They isn't quite that bad. How do they get out of, if they go to, say, South America, or go to Hawaii, and get away from their family, then they jump out of the country.
Yes.
They get over their ulcer. In other words, what's the solution?
Well, you're asking the wrong question. The question is, what is that person prepared to do about his or her bat? If that person is willing to talk to their ulcer, they may get some very interesting information. Now, that's an aspect of active imagination that's been developed quite extensively by different analysts and different individuals to talk to a physical symptom. There was an analyst in Zurich, quite amused, he really caused quite a stir in one lecture where he was talking about impotence. And he said, you guys, when you can't get it up, you talk to him and ask him why he doesn't want to get in there. Because he may have a different idea from yourself. You may want to make love to that woman, but he's got something else on his mind, or he feels something that you don't. Is that any help? Yes.
I'm wondering what symptom oriented therapies like the movie modification or some of the hypnotic techniques have to do with this. As you said, analysis is too concerned with symptomology. So you could have someone in there, for instance, going in for obesity and remaining with obesity for the rest of their lives while they've been doing the training. And I'm wondering where the line is between being forced to confront yourself with this conflict and trusting to the moral integrity and kind of getting rid of some of your more pressing life problems with other techniques. Where is copping out energy and taking care of yourself
begin? Oh, they're concurrent. I mean, taking care of yourself is being in the process and being concerned about what is happening in your body, in your relationships, in every aspect of your life. It necessarily always involves conflicts. Harmony is an ideal condition. Well, I'm not. Well, I would do none of those options you suggested. But at some point, the man would have to come to terms with how he feels about his wife. I mean, that would be fundamental in the situation. He might know, but he might be afraid to admit to consciousness his feelings. Remember, when I talk about a conflict that is unconscious, the reason that it's unconscious is that these insights and realizations about oneself are not compatible. I mean, these potential insights and realizations are not compatible with the ego position. And to admit them to consciousness creates a conflict, makes the conflict inescapable. If this man that I'm talking about If an idea came up that he didn't actually love his wife, now if that were true and he could say, yes, that's true, and he wouldn't have any conflict anymore, then he could leave her. But it's precisely because he loves or thinks he loves his wife that he has a conflict. Now I may discover after some time and analysis, as this man in fact did, who married his wife was a complex of his, was another personality that he, during analysis, became very objective about and didn't want to be involved with that woman anymore. Now that happens in analysis, but it happens just as often that relationships prosper. Of course, I was just going to say, Rob, that in any relationship situation, if one person is in analysis and the other isn't, it often produces intolerable strains on the relationship, because the one who is in analysis is becoming conscious of unconscious things that are happening between the two and has to bear all the responsibility for the relationship. So it's more likely if both partners aren't in analysis that the relationship will break up. That's just statistical.
thing started to be extraordinarily like some of the early recorded cases of Sigmund Freud, in which he, like the famous case of the girl who had paralysis in the arm because she wanted to murder somebody or hurt them very bad. I presume that's very much the same sort of thing.
Well, sure. Jungian analysis and Jung himself never discounted Freud's insights about what happens in terms of unconscious, what do they call it, conversion symptoms. Right? You want to do something, but you can't. The conscious attitude can't live with it, so you repress it, and it comes out in your arm being paralyzed, for instance. Or you run into a tree with your automobile. Sure, Jung did not want to make this quite clear. Jung did not supersede Freud. He saw things in a different light. But Jung went even further to say that for the first half of life, really, an orthodox Freudian analysis was quite adequate. And there aren't many people that you meet at whatever age who are in the second half of life. By which I mean that there are people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s who are still working out the problems that one would ideally associate with the first half of life. That is, developing a strong ego and molding the world to their bidding, so to speak. Getting a strong enough ego to stand the kind of conflicts that I'm talking about. Yes? Well, one of the things I notice in myself and in other parents is the inclination to save our children from conflict situations. Okay? Don't expose them to something where they're going to be confused and have conflicting attitudes. I don't think that is necessary. Let them experience a different situation and make what they can of it. I mean, that is in the service of developing an ego. The other thing that I suggested about conflict with children, it is often the result of the parents not being able or not being conscious of a conflict in themselves. And so it is naturally acted out on the outside world, their children included. So they that's enough if I won't say any more about that. Yes.
Thinking about children, the question came up in my mind this time and also the last time with Dr. Kapuscinski and all his threads. It's so nice when you only have one ball of thread. But as soon as you start working with families, you discover that they're all tangled and intertwined and there isn't any Aeneas without Dido and so on and so forth. And what would have happened if they had kids? Sometimes, instead of having a stiff neck or an auto accident, what happens is the children become the symptom bearers. And seemingly, you would deal with that differently from having somebody talk to his neck. But I've been sitting here trying to figure out how would you refer a person to family therapy, or what would you do in a situation like that?
Well, you see, I see a very small number of people and a very really select part of the population, that is, people who are really serious about working on themselves. In the context of what I do, social work is unbearable.
I'm not even talking about social work. I'm talking about people whose conflicts show up
Well, it depends on who's in analysis. Of course, that's very true. I know that. If a person is in analysis and takes their own symptoms seriously, then it's a matter of experience that the children stop manifesting that kind of behavior. Because they no longer have to, for instance, act out what is unconscious in the parent. It may be that the children are obliged, quite against their own will, to act in a certain way, but it's not coming from them, it's coming from one or the other of the parents. Jung went so far as to say you could analyze parents through their children in some cases, through the children's dreams.
Was that what Jung meant by talking about children living out the unlived life of the parents?
Partially, but he went even further to say in later life, okay, in later life, they may find themselves living a life that is alien to them, and only when they come into situations that they can no longer adapt to in real life, may they be driven to discover that all along they have been living out a life that was more or less consciously demanded by the unconscious of the parent. Now, on a conscious level, that may be, no one may be aware of that. It's a very subtle thing, and only after some time of depth analysis may one come to that realization or insight. Yes. Well, I think cancer is fairly well accepted now to be, by anyone who sees disease as having a psychological factor, cancer is seen as being a disease of despair. Which organ of the body it attacks seems to be a consequence of a constitutional weakness in that organ. Physiological, hereditary, perhaps. Yeah. Well, it depends on when it's dealt with. In Mrs. Woodman's book on obesity, one of the persons she worked with died of cancer after she'd been in analysis a couple of years. So far as to say that analysis is going to cure cancer, that would be foolish. But there have been articles written by other analysts, Jungians and Freudians, which investigate the psychological factors that lie behind cancer. It's certainly not something one could look on as an eventual cure for cancer, psychoanalysis. I don't think so. There are too many problematical factors.
Are you ruling, if I understand you, are you ruling out the symbolic manifestation of a certain area of the body? You're saying it's simply despair and it attacks you where you're weak physically? Are you saying...
No, I didn't mean... You're quite right. I didn't mean to say that that the symbolic nature of that organ may not be involved too.
I don't think we can say such things as cancer is. I can see that cancer would cause despair, but to say that it's caused by despair, I don't think that's
Well, okay, I mean, I'm not a medical doctor either. All right, what we don't know is why one person is susceptible to cancer and not someone else, when they may have the same living habits. I wouldn't by any means try to convince anyone that cancer was a psychological thing. But it is well known that there are psychological factors to many instances of cancer. No one will quarrel with that, and that's as far as I would go. Yes. War.
Yes.
Well, look at the Second World War. Look at the First World War. It's really a rather better example, I think, where one side is projecting into the other side all the shadow characteristics that they won't admit to themselves. I mean, the British are just as Teutonic as the Germans. And the Germans are just as conservative as the British. What I was suggesting was that in an international conflict, you see the shadow side of one nation being projected into the other nation, and that enables them to tell their own people how terrible the other nation is and whip up what we know as a war frenzy. So they have some motivation to go out and kill. If any of you saw that film Playing for Time on television the other night, it was a very powerful film. And at one point in there, Vanessa Redgrave is talking to the young Jewish girl. The Jewish girl says that the commandant of the camp is such an ugly person. In fact, one could see on the screen that she wasn't ugly at all. And Vanessa Redgrave said, well, she's not ugly, she's beautiful. That's what's so horrible. She's just like us. Where the young Jewish girl was trying to get away with, I mean, no doubt believing, that all the evil things were embodied, personified by the camp commandant. What Vanessa Redgrave did, in effect, was step back from that projection and say, I could stand it if I could believe that she was inhuman. But she's not. She's just like you and me. And that's what's so difficult to stand. If we can... I think it's self-evident that if one can come to that realization about other countries and other peoples, there wouldn't be any wars. I mean, there would be no reason for a war. Yes. Depends on you and me. The history doesn't read well in that respect.
One of the shocking things about what you've just been saying to me is that those of us who remember the Second World War well recall how monstrous the Russians were. So they came in on our side, then suddenly they were splendid. And then after a while, they were bad again. We're idiots.
How would you see that? I hadn't thought about that. They switched, didn't they? They just...
And we switched, bang, bang, bang. And suddenly the propaganda was all about how splendid the Russians were and what fine troops they had. Before then, we've been talking about the lost cardboard tanks.
Mm-hmm. And then 10 years later, it was back the other way.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, we have time for a couple more questions, and then we... Yeah, we debouch and have a drink, yes?
You talked about the imperative for consciousness being more related to feeling rather than intelligence or the thinking function. And that statement, as well as some other things that seem to be intimated in what you have said, seem to give a primacy to the feeling function. Could you say something about that?
Well, in the Jungian model, what feeling is involved with is a relationship between people and between things, because it's the way he puts it. It's an evaluative judgment. It tells you what something is worth to you. Unless you establish a satisfactory relationship with the outside world, in terms of the way you feel about it, then you don't know whether to flee or fight. Right? So something happens that you can't live with, you're immediately confused, and you have to determine what is it worth to me to stay here and live with this situation or go somewhere else. Feeling is closely allied but not identical with eros. And that's from the other pole, from logos, which is involved more with ideas and concepts and thinking. And the reason why I don't see why I said that about thinking was that thinking can be the greatest enemy to resolving a conflict, because the whole conflict gets caught in the head and gets spun around and around and around. Von Franz identifies that in the Puer Eternus book as a consequence of the mother complex, which comes in at the moment when action is required, comes in to make one dither and blather, because it keeps the child a child. Yes. Well, I mean, there is no such thing as Jungian consciousness. There is the model that Jung used to get a handle on what was happening in the psyche. So I don't know exactly what you mean. I mean, Jung had no monopoly on being conscious. He had a way of looking at difficulties in life and in himself. And he developed those through his own experience with his own unconscious and his own relationships. Well, again, I don't know exactly what you mean. Being aware, you can have many ways, or many, there can be many different models of the psyche, and one whatever one feels comfortable with, then one uses. But that isn't to set a hierarchy of consciousness. Yes. I'm saying that, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It seems to be more what is necessary to constellate in order to for the transcendent function to manifest.
Yeah, but then what does that have to do with the functioning of the individual? I mean, does that mean that they may have, you know, because I've heard you say too that individuation is more complicated.
That's a good question. I don't know what to do with that one.
I know what you mean. It comes up.
You see, if one superior function, you're asking questions that I can't answer, because if your superior function is feeling, then the difficulties you will have in life will have to do with thinking. It's opposite. All I'm saying is that experience shows that whatever the superior function is, on the whole, one has more difficulty with feeling. Because even a person who has a superior function of feeling is, until they have differentiated the feeling from emotion, can't be said to be functioning in a satisfactory feeling way. And remember that emotion, affect, contaminates all the functions. So with an undifferentiated person, it's just a bowl of soup, no matter what their superior function is. Yes. That's a good point, yes.
We don't trust our feelings whether we're our first function is feeling or not, I think, because it's conscious.
And also, there's a value that really differentiates it from the collection, because it's the individual value.
It's the individual value that has to be determined when you get involved with a solution for an individual conflict. I'll have to look that up. He does say that on the whole, the difficulties in life that one comes across, you stumble over your shadow, and that is involves the inferior function. Yeah. Yes, he does say that. I don't think it's incompatible with what I said about feeling. It may be one of those paradoxes we have to live with. Yes. No, I think that's an expression of whimpering. I think we better stop now. Thank you very much.
Yeah, come on up.